This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
On a weekend of sporting nothingness for yours truly, we are back with another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one and only official UK Seahawkers podcast. To do that this week, talk over everything that occurred in Santa Clara at the weekend and look ahead to this week's Sunday Night Football showdown back in Seattle, is a man who had a slightly more enjoyable sporting weekend apart from those 3 hours on Sunday night, Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
We are well. When Spurs win, Arsenal lose, you know, Sunday night became a bit of a bonus that I was kind of hoping we'd get done. But overall, it was a net positive despite the absolute filth that the Seahawks served us up into the wee hours.
Yeah, I think too much shipyard was supped and 12-year-old whiskey on my end to fully comprehend just the absolute messiness of what happened at Santa Clara. But it was, I mean, we kind of didn't do anything and got there's nothing from nothing, wasn't it, really, on Sunday?
It was one of those games that, like, all of a sudden it was 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Like, you just expect that, oh, well, at some point we'll start winning. And then that kind of some point never happened. So, yeah, it was just bollocks, really, wasn't it?
It was. For
want of a better and kinder expression, it was just bollocks.
It was just a lot, howl of a lot of nothing. The San Francisco 49ers winning on a last-second goal field kick by the always reliable Robbie Gould, won out in overtime, 26-23. Before we got to the Niners and what they did 2 weeks after getting absolutely drubbed to near death in Seattle, we'll talk about the Seahawks. It's a low-hanging fruit every time the Seahawks lose because of our, shall we say, distaste for the guy corner plays, but there's some examples on Sunday where it's almost unforgivable at times. That means they just give up in overtime, didn't they?
Any play that fell behind the sticks, let's be honest, with when you give up 76 penalties per quarter, that's going to be a lot of plays offensively. It was just ridiculous that any time we were in second and, in their terms, not manageable, it was like, right, inside handoff, get rid of it, punt it away and we'll start again. And ultimately that's fine every now and again, but I think the Seahawks don't even have not had a single attempt or something on 3rd and 15 so far this season, and the league average completion on 3rd and 15 is 10% to pick up a first down. So the fact that we're at 0% is just, it's just laughable. And ultimately, if the run game is fine and the passing game is, you know, fine, if you're also willing to just shut down any drive that isn't doing that well, you're asking for trouble against, especially when your defense isn't really up to it because of personnel problems. So it was kind of a perfect storm of shooting ourselves in the foot, the hand, the elbow, the neck and the earlobe, and we ended up with a loss.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of criticism on the overtime rules in the NFL, especially when you compare it to how college ball does it, which is just so much a better way of doing it. Even if you get 7 periods of overtime, it's just such a better way of doing things. But it's set up in a way where you have to kind of, you have to go for it. You have to put yourself in situations where you go for it, because especially when you get the ball first, because there's a very good chance you're either not going to get the ball back or you're not going to come out with a win. And the Seahawks, just as they are with so many things in the offensive side of the ball, just anti the norm on Sunday, weren't they? But overall, Russell Wilson, 23 for 31, 237 yards, 2 touchdowns, sacked 3 times. It's a weirdly efficient stat line, and it goes back to your point where you just at any point on Sunday you just kind of expected the Seahawks to just edge the game out and get the win and just go home. But it never fermented on Sunday, did it?
Yeah, I mean, Wilson never looked particularly troubled. I don't think he was allowed to be the quarterback that he is on too many drives. But, you know, in general, I can't think of, I mean, obviously it's a long time ago now, but I can't think of that many throws where you're thinking, oh, for God's sake, Russell. I mean, if anything, I think Nick Mullins had more of those than Wilson did. I think he overthrew Kittle on two touchdowns, really.
Yeah.
It was just a frustrating game where, I don't know, I was trying to watch that. I was watching the Steelers game as well, and all of a sudden it was 12:30 at night and we were on the final drive of the game, and I thought, how the hell have we gotten here? it was just one of those weird classic December NFC West Seahawk just drop one for no reason.
Yeah. Russell Wilson on Sunday was thrown to a pretty as healthy as he's going to get wide receiver caught. Tyler Lockett caught both of his targets on Sunday for 45 yards, but angry Doug Baldwin, as Dwayne Brown was heard to call him, shouted at him on the sideline on Sunday, returned in some style, 4 catches and 6 targets, 77 yards, and both Russell Wilson touchdowns went to DB8-9. I mean, there's a lot of things wrong with the Seahawks offense. When it goes wrong in full, just full-blown style. But when Doug Baldwin's on there, the trust that Wilson has in Doug Baldwin kind of seems... It's almost like a paper in the cracks, isn't it, when DB89's out there?
It's like watching a different team. They just look completely more comfortable and more at ease with everything they're doing versus what's going on when Baldwin isn't on the field. He's the go-to guy. Yeah. He's by far the guy that Wilson trusts more than anyone else in their receiving core. And they combined for 2. I mean, the second touchdown I thought was going to be a pick 6, but all of a sudden, you know, Baldwin's hands shoot up and it's a touchdown. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was. I kind of got the sense on Sunday that Russell Wilson is a lot more comfortable when he's on the field as well, Adam.
Yeah, for sure.
Because as we said, the last few years, obviously a lot of the things last couple of years with Jimmy Graham and Paul Richardson, is that he didn't have the trust in them. He doesn't seem to trust. I mean, it might be a push to say he doesn't seem to be trusting what is called unless it involves a pass to Baldwin. Do you think that's fair?
I think he's the kind of guy that sort of trusts himself and trusts his ability first and foremost, but you know, human beings are, you know, Wilson is a robot obviously, but if we assume that there's a shred of humanity inside that robotic exterior, everyone in life is more comfortable when you get to do things that you recognize, and him to Baldwin's been a connection that has done very well for this team for over 6 years. So it doesn't surprise me that everything seems slowed down and slightly more efficient when Baldwin's on the field. I think his passer rating suggests that as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's 50 points is the gap now after Sunday, the 2 touchdowns of Sunday. The second touchdown from Baldwin was, in most of the games, would have been the most impressive touchdown run of the game. But then Chris Carson come and did his thing on fourth down at the goal line, and that he kind of carried 3 or 4 Niners defenders into the end zone on the 22 attempt, 119 yardage day for Chris Carson. He showed his worth again on Sunday, didn't he?
Yeah, and did I read that he didn't realise it was fourth down?
Yeah, he said yesterday or Sunday that he didn't realise it was fourth down. He said they've watched the game film back and you can see some 49ers defenders on the opposite side of the field beginning to run off the field because they think the play's over when he's immediately tackled, but then he carries the defenders with a little bit of help from Justin Britt into the end zone.
That's as frightening as it is amazing. he's been a massive positive this season. There's no other way you could dress it up, really. He's been done everything you could possibly have asked from him behind a new offensive line, basically his first year of being the lead back, because Rawls was pretty much the main guy going into last season, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
So there's not a lot more you can ask for him, and that run was really exceptional. He turned a total negative play into a touchdown. And he's been doing it all year. Fair play to him.
Yeah, obviously, though, there was no Rashad Penny. Mike Davis didn't see the field too much, and I think he got injured during the game, but he seems fine per Pete Carroll on his midweek press conference yesterday. But the run game, even though it had another 150-yard yards again, it just didn't to flash as it had the month or so before with all three of them, Davis, Penny and Carson out there. Is that fair?
Yeah, I don't know if this is going to make any sense, but I kind of feel that opposing teams are almost going bend but don't break against us when we run it. They know we're going to do it, and they know we're going to get yards from doing it, but they're kind of putting us in a position where they're like, we'll give you 150 yards, but that's all you'll get, and you're not going to get, you know, you're not going to contribute to win the game just by running anymore, and we're going to dare you to do a bit more. And ultimately, when that happens, with the offensive line being, you know, in a much worse position with Ethan Posich there versus DJ Fluka, losing probably the one of the leaders on that line, and that leads to the holding penalties, et cetera, et cetera. It was almost as if San Francisco said to us, right, we know you're going to run, and that's all right, but what else have you got? And ultimately, yeah, we didn't really have enough to win.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's all fair. 35 rush, 168 yards and touchdown on the ground again for the Seahawks on Sunday. But as you mentioned, 14 penalties and a franchise record, 148 yards in penalties, really did hamper and hold back and linger over the post-mortem after the game on Sunday. Two of those big ones came on holding calls from Ethan Posich, who was in at right guard in the place of the injured and now out for the season Jordan Simmons, who obviously was in place of the injured DJ Fluka. I mean, Ethan Posich was a second round pick last year. He was most definitely a Tom Cable guy and a Tom Cable pick, and we are 3 days away from week 16 game in his second season, and he isn't the presumed starter on Sunday. That does not bode well for him, his long-term future in Seattle, does it? He's the one hangover who hasn't seemed to turn that Jermaine Ifedi corner without Tom Cable, Adam.
Yeah, he doesn't, at the minute, look up to it. I mean, he's one of those where they talk about his versatility so much, but he looks versatile in being crap in every position.
Yep.
And that's not really an ideal situation.
No, and Pete Carroll did not want to commit to who was starting right guard when last the week before he was all for committing to Jordan Simmons starting at right guard. So that could be a thing to watch going forward. But, I mean, the O-line, despite those penalties, it's still a much better unit than it was last few years. But it was just an all-round nothing day, wasn't it? And no matter how you look at the game, no matter what angle you take on it.
Yeah, I think if you consider how bad they were last year, you have to assume there was always going to be a day that was just not at the level that we've come to expect this year. So, and I still think that, you know, the offensive line wasn't good, the penalties weren't good, but I still think with a bit better execution and a bit more imagination from a play perspective, and, you know, it was a game we could have had. And it's a shame because we've found a way. Well, you know, you and I have said this a lot this year that, you know, if you pride yourselves on keeping games close and you do all your can you win the game in the first quarter nonsense, ultimately, if you fall off the track slightly, you're going to lose. And if ever there was a message to say, you know, sometimes just beat the piss out of one of these teams early because they're rubbish, yeah, and don't give them the chance to keep it close, there's your prime example.
Yeah, so look, really, the bottom five or six teams in the NFL, we've played three of them, Oakland, Arizona, and San Francisco twice. Beating the snot out of them is probably two and two, isn't it? It's like they've done it twice, and then they obviously stumbled over the line in Arizona, and obviously this past Sunday, that's probably. But obviously, for the Niners, though, I mean, 2 weeks, and they changed a lot up, and they kind of knew what was being, as you said, they kind of knew what was being thrown at them, which is something which has hung over every Seahawks loss this season with how predictable the offense is, as you said about the run game, Adam.
Yeah, I think in fairness to them, Kyle Shanahan has proven himself time and time again as an absolute master of an offensive coordinator, and the gap between him and Schottenheimer was stark and depressing, to be quite honest. And in fairness, you've got to give Nick Mullins a lot of credit. He came into Seattle and threw for 450 yards 2 weeks ago, and people put that down as an aberration. But, you know, the guy takes hits. He gets back up. He throws. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy. But, you know, he's a decent quarterback. And considering he's ultimately third choice going into the season, you've got to give him and Shanahan a lot of credit for putting together an offensive game plan that was good enough to beat a decent side like Seattle. I thought they did really well.
I agree. I think what we've seen a lot of times, we've seen it with Wilson a few times this year as well, all you really need in games like this, with close games, is not the quarterback to not make a mistake. And he, 20-29, 275, a touchdown, no interceptions, no, didn't fumble the ball, he's only sacked three times. That kind of helps get everything else going. Matt Breida was back for the 49ers, which seemed to make a big difference. And George Kittle had half of Santa Clara again, as he did the week before against the Broncos, obviously, as you said, just with a couple of overthrows from the former Southern Mississippi quarterback. Defensively, for the Seahawks, up front is the bright spot of Sunday. Frank Clark got another sack. Jaron Reed got another sack, and then was, as we'll go later, probably got one of the more surprising snubs in the popularity contest, is the Pro Bowl. But behind him, Bradley McDougal's absence midway through the game, and it sounds like he's still away from the team, is going to be a worry, not just into this week, but the next two, three, four, however many games Seahawks have left this year, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a complete disaster if we lost McDougal. He's the only one on, you know, in that back end who's really looked to be a quality player all season. You know, Trey Flowers has done very well, but I think probably with the caveat that he's a rookie, whereas McDougal has been just an elite player for us this season and deserves all the praise he can get. Losing him would be disastrous, and of all the teams you really don't want to lose him against, it's probably Kansas City, who are the masters of the deep ball. And yeah, it showed when he was out. I mean, the spaces between the lines were quite alarming. And it was just a lack of communication in the secondary. You know, if he's the guy calling the plays, but they're, you know, they just looked a lot less organized without him.
Yeah, they did. Up front, though, Frank Clark and Jaron Reed it was the first game I wore my new Jaron Reed jersey on Sunday. So that's an ominous start for that jersey. But he's going to make the team have a tough decision next year, I think, isn't it? His contract will be up.
Yeah, he's played 3 years.
So, yeah, so after next season, it'll be a decision which could be a tough one, probably.
Was he a first-round pick?
Second-round pick.
Oh, so he hasn't even got an option they can pick up then.
No, so it will be next year. And a player we'll mention later when we preview week 16, Chris Jones, is going to be someone who could set that market, as he was picked about 10 spots ahead of Jaron Reed. But he's really becoming one of the young stars in the league, if not underrated, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, the whole knock on him beforehand was that he was just a run-stuffing defensive tackle who couldn't rush the passer. But in the last, I'd even go back and say last year he was showing signs of it. Yeah. But this year especially, I mean, 8.5 sacks from that position is an amazing achievement after, you know, at this position in the season. Yep. So, yeah, good luck to him, and hope, you know, he deserves all the money he's going to get.
Yeah, hopefully it will be in Seattle, because otherwise that'll be an unwise jersey purchase. But right next to him, though, is probably one of the most Seahawk drafts, one of the better Seahawks draft stories of this year, definitely. Puna Ford, drafted free agent defensive tackle out of Texas. He caused some havoc on Sunday, didn't he?
Anyone that brings back the belly roll or the belly rub in his case after a sack is a friend of mine, because that's just great to see from the Mebane days. I loved it. Yeah. I mean, he was destructive. Almost one of those guys that you think, you know, because of his lack of size, he can look so dangerous. And, you know, you and I were always a huge fan of Jordan Hill when he was there. Yeah. And some of those plays kind of reminded me of some of the stuff that we thought Hill was going to make a great career of, but, you know, probably with a bit more stability.
Yeah. Well, the main reason he wasn't drafted, because he was good in college, was that he was just small. I think if he's not 6 foot, he's 6 foot.
I think he's 5'11".
Yeah. But on Sunday, he had three combined tackles, three solo, three assisted, and three tackles for loss. Two of them are really impressive swim moves where he just blew up a couple of run plays from the 49ers. But defensively, it was just the same as the offense, wasn't it? Really, it was just a lot of nothingness. And with what's rolling down this Sunday, slightly concerning.
Yeah, I think the defense against a team like San Francisco gave you enough to win.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be enough to win against a proper team, which is, the worry going into Sunday against a team that have to win now.
Yeah. So overall, though, one to praise for Sunday?
I think Puna Ford's probably the guy.
Yeah.
And always great to see Doug Baldwin do it for us.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go, just be different. I'm going to go Michael Dixon, who just, there's one of the punts where it lands on a two and just jumps directly straight into the air. I'm not sure how he does it, but it's pretty cool to watch. After Sunday, though, the Seahawks still haven't clinched their playoff berth, but they can do moving into this week in a variety of ways. Basically, just winning will really stamp their ticket into playing football in January. Tyler Lockett and Doug Baldwin are the only wide receiver duo to have zero drops between them on a minimum 50 targets in the NFL this season. Bobby Wagner is one of two linebackers who is yet to miss a tackle on the 2018 season. And the aforementioned Puna Ford is in the top 10 of interior defensive linemen as per PFF ratings, which is just remarkable for an undrafted rookie. Moving on, the Seahawks, as I said, can clinch a playoff berth this Sunday as they welcome the GOAT quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and the Kansas City Chiefs into CenturyLink Field.
What's going on, guys? This is Michael Robinson, and you're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast.
So, yeah, the Chiefs on Sunday night, but before we get that, just a few injury notes from the Seahawks. Jordan Simmons, as I said, is on IR with a knee injury suffered in the game on Sunday. Rashad Penny is going to be, it sounds like it's going to be a game time decision on Sunday night football. And as we said, Bradley McDougal is currently away from the team and will return to the team on Friday, which doesn't bode well for him. And also the Pro Bowl rosters were announced earlier this week. The Seahawks had two first team selections to the Pro Bowl in 2018. Bobby Wagner at linebacker and Michael Dixon became the first rookie punter since 1986 to be voted to the Pro Bowl in his rookie year. And there were seven alternates. We mentioned that Jaron Reed was snubbed, but how in the world, and does it not just sum up the Pro Bowl, Adam, when KJ Wright is voted as a Pro Bowl alternate in 2018?
The thing that surprised me the most of it is that someone like Richard Sherman hedged like $2.5 million on being selected to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
It just seems crazy to me that you would put yourself in that position. And if there's actual contract, bonuses about being in the Pro Bowl, how is it allowed to be just kind of by how many tweets someone makes? That just seems crazy.
It's absolutely bonkers. I mean, I think outside of money, I think the players are a lot more concerned with all-pro votes, because I think that's very much more along the lines of what they actually put on film, and actually voted differently as well. But yeah, it's just, when I saw KJ Wright's name, I mean, KJ Wright is been a good player. So yeah, it's just unbelievable, some of the people. And, obviously, Alvin Kamara didn't make the Pro Bowl. Darius Leonard didn't make the Pro Bowl. He's probably going to set all sorts of rookie tackling records for the Colts this year. It's just, I think this is the, it happens every year. There's always a few things where you're going, what the hell's happening there? But the way it's set up is slightly bizarre. And the timing of the game is also completely irrelevant and meaningless, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, it's nice to have it, but it's a bit of a nonsense, let's be honest.
So, moving on, Sunday Night Football, Week 16, the Seahawks' penultimate home game on the 2018 regular season, and possibly the number one, probably after the last few weeks, the number one offense in the NFL roll into town. When the schedule was made, I'm probably going to put this as the game I was looking forward to watching the most, and it had a lot to do with their quarterback. I mean, he's probably backed your claim up a few weeks ago that he should win and probably will win the league's MVP. He's quite a player, isn't he?
He is, but he's now lost his three big games. And I'm not going to go down the QB wins route as the be-all and end-all, but the wins do matter. He does touch the ball every play. And I just wonder if that season, what with the Kareem Hunt news, Tyreek Hill isn't that healthy. I hope it doesn't happen because I'd like them to win the AFC, but I wonder if they might be slightly concerned given they are what a team that are perennial chokers in the last decade. I wonder if they're slightly cautious that it could happen again.
Well, I don't think it's so much the Chiefs. I think it's the guy at the forefront on the headline with the impressive looking moustache for the last 20 years. And I think it's more him who's had the choke artist tag labeled to him, isn't it?
Yeah, but when that happens at the team, you know, the fans are not, you know, if for whatever reason they don't make the wild, they don't win the division, which at the minute looks, you know, 50-50, and they have to go and play the Chargers or, I don't know, maybe even the Patriots on the road. I think they're better than those two teams, but there's a wiring thing there that they haven't been able to get over the line in the biggest of big games yet.
Yeah.
And that will play on their minds at least 10%.
Yeah, but I think the reason this Chiefs team is in the position they are is because of the quarterback, because of the head coach and the play calling by their offensive coordinator, who I can't remember the name of, but also because of the weapons they have. The reason they're losing games, especially last Thursday night against the Chargers, is because the defense just is not getting a stop, despite some pretty impressive performances up front on that defense. It just did not get... I mean, they're up 14 points at home with 7 minutes to go. You have to close out that game. I mean, we moan about the Seahawks, but it'd be quite an abomination if the Seahawks give up a game at home. But the Chiefs just seem to do it willingly with that defense, don't they?
Mm-hmm. And that's why I think they might have a problem going forward. Maybe not.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, 6 weeks ago I thought they were a lock just to storm everyone and just, you know, just get the ring sized up now. and now I wonder how long this is going to last.
Yeah, I think the team in their division who beat them last Thursday are probably looking like this to be their biggest challenges heading into January, because other teams in the AFC just seem to have a few issues and ailments moving forward, just as you say, the Chiefs may as well. But on the offense, outside of the Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill is just speed kills, and Travis Kelce is a worrying tight end to face after the amount of room we give the Garrett Celeks of the world on Sunday, Adam.
It's, you know, it's a huge concern, the number of targets they've got. And, you know, we haven't got the greatest pass rush, as we know, or certainly not a consistent pass rush. And you just worry that we could just be absolutely sliced and diced here, especially if there's no Bradley McDougal.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got Tyreek Hill in your final of a fantasy league game, you know, do anything to play him, because he could be on for an absolute monster game if we're not careful.
Yeah, and we said a couple of weeks ago about Trey Flowers in particular, where he came up against Davante Adams, and apart from one or two plays and a bit grabby, he kind of passed... He's got a passing grade. Tyreek Hill is another obstacle to clear, but also a completely different one to Devante, isn't he?
Yeah, when you listen to NFL players interviewed, I think something they make mention of with Tyreek Hill is that he has a speed that people are just not used to seeing. I've heard a few players interviewed on various podcasts where they say, I just cannot believe how fast this guy is.
Yeah. I think Shaquille Griffin said either yesterday or Monday that he should... asked how he's going to combat Tyreek Kelly, just because I'm just going to have to stretch a bit more on Sunday. Which is a nice quote.
Yeah, I mean, stretch. I don't know, get your best tripping, you know, subtle trips out if you can. Get your go-go gadget arm out and see if you can extend it. I don't know, but it could be very, very tough times for that secondary on Sunday if things don't go well.
Yeah, and launch points and which way the quarterback's looking is going to be a different challenge to this defense as well, isn't it?
I mean, he's so unpredictable and so brilliant that God knows what he might do at any one play.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is an unbeatable team by any stretch of the imagination. You know, I think if we are able to limit both teams to 9 or 10 drives, you know, make the game as long as possible, we've got every chance.
Yeah. Defensively, though, as I said, they do have some frailties. One of those frailties is not in their third year, second round defensive tackle Chris Jones, who equaled last Thursday an NFL record of having a sack in 10 straight games. I said a few earlier that he's going to set the market for Jaron Reed most likely, but he's the one on the... He's also going to be up against whoever our right guard is on Sunday, which is doubly concerning, but he looks quite a player, doesn't he?
I was going to say Ethan Posich can make Jan Reed a lot of money.
That's a good way of looking at it. Maybe
Jaron's slipping him, a little note in over lunch one day saying, "Look, by the way, mate, if you have another stinker, I could be in for a huge payout and I'll cut you in."
Yeah,
that could be quite something.
Yeah, I mean, right, guys, who else is in line? Surely it's not going to be Jerry Hunt. Jordan Roos is on practice squad, isn't he?
I guess if the worst comes to the worst, you could, stick a Fetty inside and Faye Fan at right tackle.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I would do that, but I'm saying that is probably an option.
Yeah, I mean, that would just be the most Seahawks thing, O-line thing ever, wouldn't it? Like 10 days after they say they wanted to change George Fant's number so he doesn't have to declare as eligible every snap, every play on offense, that they actually now need him in that number so he can play right tackle. It's just how things happen in week 16 in the NFL. But outside of that, Eric Berry got in his first full practice in over nearly a couple of years, I think, on...
imagine the surprise.
On Wednesday. there's an adjective you use to describe such things, isn't there?
Oh, it's just so crazy.
he looked like a player and played in a couple of years last Thursday, but he is their linchpin behind Chris Jones, isn't he? I mean, they don't have many stars, but he's the one, isn't he?
Yeah, he's also just obviously a fantastic leader of men. And in the same way that, for the sake of argument, Vincent Kompany may not be the best centre half in the world anymore. His leadership skills and him just being out there imbues the whole team with a level of confidence that is not there when he's not there.
Yeah.
So, it'll be a bitch if he plays, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's just not what we needed to see.
Yeah, no, it's not. And he was on a pitch count last Thursday, so interesting to see how they handle him in his second game back. But overall, though, do you think this team, more likely, the offense can hang with this Chiefs offense?
I think our defense is going to have to hang with their defense more than our offense is with theirs. If it gets to a stage where their offense is rolling, then it's irrelevant. We can't win.
We can't. This feels like where we need a defensive or special team score for us.
Yeah, minimum.
Yeah. Like obviously, we give up a kick return on Jaikowski's effort, should we say, on Sunday. But this kind of feels like we need Lockett to break one, or we need. My confidence is quite low, especially the fact they've had 10 days to prepare, but there's a hell of a lot on this game for them now after last Thursday, isn't there?
Yeah. Elephant in the room, literally an elephant the size of Janikowski. What did you make of that effort from Seabass?
The thing I didn't really like, I guess, is Pete Carroll on Sunday said, he did what he's asked to do to get the returner back. To turn back inside, and then like 20 hours later, he throws him under the bus. It's the
big bus.
Yeah, it's a pretty big bus. But it was really strange how Pete Carroll handled it. But
he obviously hadn't watched it back. I think you need to see how bad that looks.
It did not look good. But also, he hasn't made a tackle for like 11 years in the NFL. And to be fair, if you're relying on, you shouldn't. If you're relying on your kicker to make a special teams tackle, then something has gone badly wrong anyway, and it's just kind of you're kind of lip reading in Parliament at that point. I think you're kind of just trying to find a distraction.
I don't know what you reckon, but I think if we'd gone from Hauschka to Janikowski as opposed to Walsh to Janikowski,
I think that's fair.
He'd have been cut by now.
I'm not sure. I don't think he's been that bad kicking the ball.
He's missed three of his last four extra points.
Has he?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Or when he missed that one yesterday, on Sunday.
No, yeah.
I mean, he's been fine.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's given that effort. I don't think he thought he'd get picked up by anyone. And I think he's using this year as a bit of a laugh, to be honest. I don't blame him for that. He's 41 years of age. I don't blame him for not making the tackle at all. But, the onus is on the team to probably expect a bit better.
Yeah, and if you're not a fan of Jaikowski, I wouldn't go and see what Jason Myers is doing for the Jets. He is nailing absolutely everything. I do think after Blair Walsh, it kind of feels like he was
he was like, oh, yeah, of course they signed Janikowski. Because they were never going to go from Blair Walsh to rookie, because as you saw with the kicker in Minnesota, the kicker in, is it Cleveland? The young kickers don't have the war wounds that Janikowski did, and it's what kind of blighted Blair Walsh in the second half of last year, isn't it? And it kind of made sense they went this route with the kicker, didn't it?
Oh, for sure. But I just think that they were so scarred from last year's Walsh nonsense that this year, they just want an old bloke who can kick the majority of them through.
Yeah, and has a short-term memory. Prediction for Sunday night, Adam?
Ooh, I'm going to go 31-24 Chiefs.
I think I've got 35-26. But I don't think we're going to score that many.
But I do think we could win, which is the weirdest part of the whole thing.
It just feels like everyone's talking about primetime record at home. Pete Carroll's primetime record, still like football. As you said, with the Chiefs losing a few of the big stage games this year, I think this might be. I know I've just predicted like an 8-point game. I think this might be a boat race.
Well, look. I think this will tell you a lot more about the Chiefs than it will the Seahawks, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I also think a lot... My confidence will depend on how Pete Carroll describes Bradley McDougal tomorrow evening.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think KJ Wright appears like he's going to be back, but is his body able to get him through a 60-minute, four-quarter game anymore? We haven't really seen that this year, which is a shame. His presence is going to help. But Bradley McDougal, because one of the things I tweeted during the game on Sunday was that Tajik Thompson appears to be working as Earl Thomas's agent, just in a way of getting him paid. This way, there's at least one example of Tajik Thompson slipping over. It seems for the last 6 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, they mentioned that they were worried about the studs they were wearing. I think McDougal or Thompson said the only time they wore long studs all season was at Wembley, funnily enough. Tedrick, was it a touchdown that he slipped on for Selleck?
I think so.
I think it was. On to the right of the camera, I think Thompson really slipped for a touchdown, and it looked very, very silly.
Yeah, he did. But that's just kind of what you get from that, isn't it? At this point, moving on. So week 15 in the NFL, moving into week 16 in the NFL, and it's time to get back in that bin.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly is an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
People's favourite, I think. This is slowly becoming, including yours, Adam. Hand the floor over to you. This week's GOTB.
Weird one. The NFC can get in the bin.
Okay.
Because I don't really think the NFC has got five, even four teams that I would say are kind of playoff worthy this season. I mean, do you remember, we've had quite a few years of the NFC being probably the dominant conference. Yeah. And you've looked across it, bloody hell, there's some dreck in the AFC. Titans against Chiefs last year is hardly a great game. Brock Osweiler had a game. The Raiders without Derek Carr were in the playoffs. And you just thought, Jesus Christ, you've got a lot of dreck. And I've always thought, oh, can you imagine if the Seahawks got a chance to play in a division that easy? And we're kind of getting it this year. And sadly, we've not really at the same level as we once were, because there are not six teams in the NFC that are worthy of being in the playoffs.
Not at all. Not any.
And as a result, they will have to get in some kind of nationwide sized bin. I've not worked out how this bin is going to work because, you know, it's got to stretch from coast to coast.
You could probably do like postal service.
Yeah. As UPS would have to be very important here. But yeah, I just think the division has really not been good at all this year. You know, even the Bears, who are probably going to be the third seed. Yeah. Once they get through their first two drives on offense, what have they really got apart from Tariq Cohen dump offs and wheel routes?
I think like the team, the teams are going to make the NFC. I mean, there's to be fair though, we're sitting there week 16, a win away from the playoffs because of that, though, aren't we?
For sure, but Dallas could be the fourth seed, and they got shut out last week
by the Colts, who
started 1-5. Yeah,
and their defense isn't what's got them to the position they're in now. It's their offense and run game and Andrew Luck, who's playing out of his skin.
It really is crazy. Yeah,
but now, the NFC, you've got the Saints. It's probably true both sides. That's why I think the team we're playing on Sunday and the team that their closest rivals in that division will probably hate the fact they're in the same, not only in the same division, the same conference, because they are probably one and two the best teams in the NFL. Because the Saints didn't look great on Monday against a Panthers team, which kind of they seem to, in some aspects, mail it in or to have no regard for their quarterback at all either. And the Patriots seem to be hobbling through the season, a lot deeper into the season than they do in the last few years. I think there's talk on all the usual nonsense TV shows, Coward and Bayless and all that nonsense, that Tom Brady's actually got knee injuries, carrying all that. Their defense isn't great, and you've got everything. The Texans kind of look all right, but kind of did a very, very good impression of the Seahawks on Sunday night. Just kind of kept a bad team around for far too long in that game against the Jets in a half-empty MetLife. So there just seems to be a lot of teams both sides of the aisle, which kind of, yeah, they're just a lot of nothingness, and the haves and have-nots are. It's a lot more have-nots than haves, it appears, this year, Adam.
It's been probably one of the best seasons of football to watch that I can remember for a long time, and yet it's featured some of the worst good teams as well. So go figure how that works.
Yeah, I mean, it is a league all about parity, so I guess that may be what they kind of hope for. But I'm not too sure. This is probably A1 in their hopes, but also in the NFC, I think NFC especially, all the playoff teams are going to be teams where they would much rather play at home. I mean, Chicago are going to want to get anyone in that cold in Chicago. Jared Goff just doesn't like playing out of California. Imagine my surprise. Drew Brees obviously is probably going to be better in a dome, but I think they're probably the team most adept to playing on the road in the NFC. Then obviously the Seahawks of all the centric field. Vikings seem to be more proficient at home, and then you've got the teams on the outside of that. I don't know who's left in the hunt. They just seem to be a lot better on the road at home, Adam. So that's a whole 16-team conference in the bin. I'm going to go for an entire department of the league, and I'm going to put the NFL referees into the bin. Obviously, we saw the Seahawks get a flag to just on every snap, it seemed, in that fourth quarter on Sunday. But and some of the calls, especially the Shaquille Griffin PR, which kind of set the Niners up for the game winner.
I thought it was defensive holding, Stu. I thought it was defensive holding at the top of the route, which I think would have been a first down anyway. I don't think it was pass interference, though. So
yeah, but I just regard, think the standards of officiating is absolutely dreadful. It is scarily bad. It is turn off your TV bad. The Chargers won that game on a very strange PI holding call as well, which put them in position to score the goal line touchdown, obviously, then the 2-point conversion. The officiating is having way too much of a say on things, and there's obviously a few people out there with a few conspiracy theories as to why, but yeesh, this and the referees, and then you've got people like Mike Pereira. You've got every network now has a referee in the booth, and they just kind of it's just not good, is it?
No, I mean, I think the only way that you can even start to solve it is that every play should be reviewable.
Not,
You know, if an offensive, if a coach thinks they got jobbed on pass interference, they should be able to review that as opposed to the way it is now. It's just silly. There's no reason for it. If you want to lose your challenges on something, you should be able to lose them. I don't really understand why they've got this set of rules where only X, Y, and Z can be challenged and not A, B, and C.
But then you've got a league north of the border which, for some reason, only play two downs and then you punt. But they have coaches' challenges on OPI and DPI. So if it's missed and they think it, they can challenge it. And so if the CFL can have all their weirdness and then still manage to do that and it works and there's a lot less conjecture on their officiating calls and stuff, then a billion, multi-billion dollar industry and company should be able to set that right as well, shouldn't they?
So you'd think. I really do not understand
anyone else,
that.
Honourable mentions this week for the bid?
Honourable mentions. Who's had a stinker that deserves a mention? No, I think I'm good. I think that's me.
One more also talking. I think I'm just going to put the NFL in. Eric, the NFL for how they seem to be, I mean, it's not even seem to be at this point, targeting Eric Reed, who's, was it his... He's been
out of 11
Panthers roster for 11 weeks, and 7 of those he's been called for an in quotation marks random drugs test. Eric Reed obviously has only been signed for 11 weeks because of how he stood side to side and continues to support Colin Kaepernick, who just continues to be weirdly blackballed, as you saw this week. Josh Johnson won his first NFL game, and Nathan Peterman was signed to the Raiders yesterday. So it's just every week just more stuff which Colin Kaepernick must be going, yep, that's an extra million on my settlement. But yeah, the NFL just need to...
And Josh Johnson beat Cody Kessler, who threw for 57 yards.
Oh my days! I just saw the scoreline. I saw the scoreline and obviously the game, and I didn't read any. Jesus Christ!
57 yards and one pick, I believe, was Cody Kessler's stat.
Okay, that's quite impressive. Other NFL, there's something which came out earlier today from New Orleans locker room. Cam Jordan said, "I want to get your opinion on this, Adam. That he wouldn't put Ben Roethlisberger in top 5 quarterbacks in this era." And the way he lined it up is quite nice and quite smart window dressing by him. But would you put Roethlisberger in top 5 for this era?
I would. Yeah, I would actually. I think that Philip Rivers and Tony Romo had amazing careers, and I guess some may argue have been better players than Ben Roethlisberger. But it goes back to my thing about the Chiefs. Like, ultimately, a human being feel pressure, and I think if you've got 2 rings to your name, then you kind of put yourself on a different plane. It's not like one where, like, Joe Flacco got 1 because he was hot for 5 weeks. Roethlisberger's got 2 rings and a number and like playoffs basically every year. I think Roethlisberger's a top quality quarterback.
Cam Jordan put in Brady, Peyton Manning. I think he even said that he put Eli out of it, which over Ben, which is where he kind of lost me. I think he does have a point with how he lined it up. Obviously, he said the journalist questioned why he put Peyton in. He goes, well, he retired 2 years ago, and that's most of Roethlisberger's career, which is a fair point. And if you're going to put it on that way, he's probably right. I think he's borderline, to be quite honest, over the last 15 years. I think the Super Bowls count massively.
Look, I think too many... Yeah, I think they're too hasty to put quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame, but... If you have a 15-year starting career with 2 rings, majority playoff appearances, I think it's hard to keep you out, to be honest. And I think his body of work is streets clear of Eli's.
Eli won both Super Bowls because of Messi, Strahan, and Mignola and all that, didn't he? He won because the defense just made a couple of big-time plays to Plex and the helmet catch of David Tyree, whatever that was back in the day. So, yeah, I think, I would put Roethlisberger ahead of Eli, but I'd go with Cam Jordan on the other thing. Also, in the NFL, this league is a lot more fun when the Browns are good, aren't they?
It's so much fun. You've got to love Baker Mayfield. He's doubted the process and you know, the thought process of making him the first overall pick, and he has more than exceeded it, and it's just great fun to watch.
Definitely. Yeah, obviously, I think that's everything. Yeah, finally, this is obviously, as I said, I was too many shipyards deep on Sunday to pay much attention to anything else. But yeah, that's the thing. That's everything, isn't it?
Apart from my lock and shock for the following week, if you'd like to take them.
Lock and shock week 16 NFL.
My lock is going to be the Titans at home to the Redskins.
Really? Okay.
Yes. The Redskins are garbage.
Okay.
And the Titans at home my are lock good.
Of,
my, in fairness, that's the only one I've even looked my, at
my
so
lock
far.
Of the week is going to be the Steelers to beat the Bengals.
The Steelers are playing the Saints.
Well, I'm on week 16, so I'm on week 17 on the sheet. Ignore that. I'm going to go in that case for days above. Good God. I'm going to go the Colts to beat the Giants.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think shock of the week is quite tricky. There's not really too much that you'd say is an enormous shock, especially this time of the year.
It would be funny if the Cardinals win, beat the Rams, wouldn't it? I mean, the Cardinals on offense are ranked 31st or 32nd in every way you stitch it up. That team has not been good this year, but that would be funny, but I don't think I'm going to pick that.
Yeah, I think there's a shock, and then there's the Buccaneers, Cardinals beating the Rams. I think that's a slightly different level.
Yeah, but also it is outside of California, so who knows what Jared Goff's going to do. Shock of the week, I'm going to go with Raiders to beat the Broncos. Does that count as a shock?
Yeah, I was going to go with the Browns to beat the Bengals just from a pedigree perspective. That could be seen as a shock. But I'd also maybe make that my lock of the week as well. So I don't know if that really is possible.
Yeah, I think that probably works. But I mean the Bengals, Jeff Driscoll, aren't that haphazard, are they? It's kind of, that's been a surprise last few weeks. I haven't seen much of the Bengals live, but look at the box scores and all the rest of it. It doesn't seem to be that bad. Also, now I don't think they obviously don't have AJ Green, and I don't think Tyler Boyd is playing this week. So it's our old Husky boy, John Ross, Adam.
Yes, who would look so much better, I think, on a team not managed by, I've forgotten his
Marvin
name.
Lewis. Marvin
how ridiculous
Lewis.
Is that? Marvin Lewis.
Yeah.
I was so thinking about Hugh because I've just got Hugh on the brain at all times when it comes to my NFL nonsense.
One more thing on Sunday. This past Sunday, Russell Wilson became just the second quarterback in NFL history to have 3,000 passing yards and 20-plus touchdowns in each of their first 7 seasons. That's never a bad thing. Like we said a couple of years ago about Doug Baldwin when he was in a conversation with Jerry Rice, is there a bad thing when you're the and to Peyton Manning, is it?
No, that's never, ever a bad stat. There was one we had last year, there was a stat about someone and Jerry Rice. It might have been Doug Baldwin, I think, for receptions or something. So I think we said there, it's never bad when it's Jerry Rice and is the stat. So, yeah, I think that's certainly accurate.
Cool. And obviously, that's probably going to be in consideration when he gets all of the money in all of the world in a year or so. Plugs, if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can, all the usual means. And as Adam urged and appears, fell on deaf ears, you can do so on podbean.com, pedestrianpodcast.podbean.com, on the Facebook page, UK Seattle Seahawks fans, all the podcast pages. Just search for the Pedestrian Podcast. On Twitter, it's at Seahawks UK. On Instagram, it's at UK Seahawkers. Also on Twitter, on our pinned tweet on at Seahawkers UK, we are running a player of the year vote, the Pedestrian Podcast Player of the Year. Quite wordy, going to be quite tough to get on the award, whatever award we choose. That will be sent over to Seattle and handed over by our friend Michael Sean Dugar to whoever wins that. It's pretty much a one-way traffic. And I will call that probably 2nd or 3rd of Jan so we can get all that ordered and sent away. And obviously then the regular season will be over for the Seahawks. Obviously then, in 7 weeks, we are hosting our Birmingham Super Bowl meet at O'Neill's on Broad Street in the city. We've got about 10 to 15 spots left if you want to come and watch the Super Bowl from Atlanta in the second city. All that information is on the Facebook and Twitter accounts as just shared. Whether you watch the game on Sunday night or Monday morning or whenever time you watch it on Christmas Eve, enjoy the game. And from both me and Adam and the Pedestrian Podcast and UK Seahawkers as a whole, we want to wish you a happy holidays and Merry Christmas to anyone who is listening and has listened to this over the past 80 odd episodes.
Yeah, we massively, massively appreciate all of your listening and your likes and your shares and your questions. I actually did get one from Dan Cohen, who is a listener who lives in the East Coast of America, who's originally from London. He sent me a message saying that the Seahawks very nearly completed a rare Watford and Seahawk double win for him last weekend, only to be dashed. And he was asking if anyone else has any of those little things that, you know, on a weekend that you're looking out for one score and another. So what we'll do is we'll come back next week, and if anyone is listening, let us know about your any team combinations that come in, that, you know, the X plus the Seahawks win makes it a great weekend versus a Seahawk loss makes it a 90% weekend, because they're always great to hear. But yeah, as Stu said, we do wish you all a very happy Christmas and a happy new year, and I hope you're all able to bring it in with a glass or two of sherry and all your lovely families.
Yeah, I think for me, like, talking on Dan's point, 1967 was Coventry got promoted. They didn't get promoted again until last year, which is obviously the only year in the last decade where the Seahawks missed the playoffs, which kind of sums everything up for my sporting doubles over weekends. Until next time, though, enjoy the game on Sunday. Hopefully the Seahawks will win, and we got something positive to talk about next week. But this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
When you signed with Texas, Michael, would, if we said 4 years later you'd be an NFL Pro Bowler, would that have been a little ridiculous?
I probably wouldn't have known what the Pro Bowl was back then, but if you said I'd be in the NFL, that was always the goal as well, so I would have been happy, but I wouldn't have been too surprised.